You know what time it is.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Jason Anderson.
Powered by CC Power Sports of Louisville.
I'd like it to be rocking. I'd like there to be 22,000 people, you know, in red. You know, I'd like this place bouncing off the walls. But at the same time, I recognize that we have to earn that. I don't think we're the deepest team in the world, but I also think that we have guys off the bench that can spark us on both ends of the floor. You know, whether it's Ryan coming in, who can certainly spread the floor and stretch the floor. A guy like Dwayne, who does a little bit of everything. I think Malik's played extremely well, as we talked about before. So I feel good about our bench. I feel good about our rotations and just keeping guys fresh.
Come on, everybody.
You're in the zone.
In the zone.
The Zone with Jason Anderson. Powered by CC Power Sports of Louisville.
What's up, Big Daddy?
Want to be part of the show? Give us a call at 267-9680.
Now,
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
They dropped the F-bomb. That was pretty bold. Never prouder to be an American.
Powered by CC Power Sports of Louisville on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
One hour from now, it'll be a Louisville basketball pregame. Season tipping off, so does our pre- and post-game coverage of Louisville basketball. Marcus Maven, Stephen Rummage. Mama calls Stephen. Stephen Rummage, they will be at the Gold House beginning at 6 o'clock. That is going to be on all stations tonight. It'll be right here on 680 105.7. It'll be on 93.9 The Ville as well. And then directly following the Cards and Nichols State game, Coors Light post-game show hosted by Stephen Rummage. He will be back at the Gold House as well after the game is over. You're here live from Chris Mack, as well as sound from the locker room, your phone calls, reactions, all of that. The first game of the Chris Mack era beginning tonight against Nichols State. So the first ever Chris Mack postgame press conference, all of that stuff. It'll be tonight. Steve Rummage will be taking you up to the tip and also postgame as well. That is tonight. Coors Light postgame show is on ESPN Louisville. We'll talk with Fat Jack coming up later on this hour. I will try to get back on the winning side, back-to-back losses to the listeners. And last week, the listener, Kevin, he earned it 4-1. Although I feel like it's an automatic loss if you go 4-1 and your one was picking Louisville to cover. Like, you don't get to win. You don't get to win at that point. That's worth five losses. He was 4-5. 4-6, actually. So I'm sorry about that, Kevin. You picked Louisville to cover the 39. That's the easy money. It's the free space. It's the free square. It's free money. Vegas, for whatever reason, is just handing out money like candy on Halloween. Rick Bozich from WDRB and WDRB.com. Rick, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Jason. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Looking forward to some more college basketball getting underway. We've seen Kentucky. We've seen Indiana. I don't know how much we'll be able to we learn from Indiana or how much we'll learn from Louisville tonight, but we got some college basketball on the docket. We got some football stuff to talk about. We got some FBI stuff to talk about. A very interesting week, Rick. Very interesting week. Where do you want to start? What's Rick burning on? You want to get a basketball take in first? You want to get this FBI stuff out of the way? You want to talk about Bobby Petrino? Or have you requested transfer papers to leave the Louisville program?
I mean, we don't have time to get through all of them, but I think, the biggest story in town still is football. I know that everybody's excited about basketball and the season beginning of the Chris Mack era, and how hard to believe it was what happened in Kentucky the other night. But, we haven't talked since last Saturday in that performance and how just abysmal it was against Clemson, of, people watching the game and looking at guys as if they really weren't engaged. And when you have the ESPN commentators are generally not that critical, and when they're talking about how guys not give an effort, which is something that, some of the local people have been saying for a long, long time, it just looked like a group of players that is not going to put out, at 100% level for this coach or this coaching staff.
The results on the field, I think, are ultimately going to lead. I think they will ultimately lead to Bobby Petrino not being the head coach. What's coming out off the field, and It should be pointed out that Louisville disagrees with Mark Ennis's report. It should be pointed out, I don't care. I fully 100% believe Mark Ennis's report. He was right on about Jordan Travis. He was right about Russ East. He clearly has his sources and people that are talking to him. He has said that 20 different players this semester have asked for their transfer papers, which, you know, I don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but he was also told by that source that that is abnormally large in volume, and it is the largest since the lacrosse fiasco. The women's lacrosse fiasco at Louisville. So I think there's a little bit of perspective there for how many people are looking to or at least thinking about transferring. And by the way, 20 different players, that's an entire recruiting class. Not that all of them will leave, but that they're at least getting the paperwork to explore different avenues and possibilities that might be out there. Those are the things, Rick, that say not only is the fate sealed on, you know, him next year, then you start to bring up, you know, does Tyree have to make a move in midseason? Are you looking at what's happened over the last week or two? Do you think there's more of a possibility now that Bobby might not be the head coach against Kentucky? Or is this one of those where Tyree is not going to make a move midseason? It's going to be after the year is over. There's nothing really, you know, to accomplish by that. Where are you leaning towards now with what we've seen over the last week or so with players leaving the program and some willing to talk to some media members anonymously about what's going on behind the scenes?
If you ask me to predict, I would say he'll make it to the end of the season, because when Vince has been asked about the situation on multiple occasions, I think he said he was going to let the season play out and make an evaluation then, and I've not heard him say anything other than that. Plus, I think if you look at the stat, I mean, who would coach the team the rest of the way? I mean, who would it be? I mean,
I would guess Summers. I would guess Summers or Lorenzo Ward, but I would guess it would be Mike Summers that would be the guy that would coach the team as an interim basis. It would be great if it was Nick Petrino. That would be the one just for the heck of it, just to bring that. But no, I think it would
be such an awkward situation.
It is,
if he gets
for sure.
fired and then you got his son and two of his son-in-laws. Could they finish the season? I mean, it's just.
I mean,
I've never seen anything like it.
Mark Jurich finished the last few months after Tom was let go and Tyree took over. So I think in an awkward position, you know, you would think that those guys could finish the year, you know, with those three kids that are there, whether his kid or in-laws. But I think Summers could do it. I think Lorenzo Ward could do it. I was with you. Like, I was, you know, Tyree's talked about it. He's mentioned December 19th. He's talked about the timeline after the season is over. He always meets with the coaches. He'll do the same thing here when it's fresh. He'll talk about the players and where the future is and what he's hearing from the coaches and what the coaches think they can do to move forward and the recruiting class. And he's mentioned December 19th a number of times. He clearly knows when signing day is for football and what's going on with this recruiting class. Until the last week or so, I was fully on board with that. But I do start to question when, you know, Jordan Travis comes out. He didn't say a whole lot, but maybe not saying a whole lot was also saying a lot, if that makes sense. Russ East is transferring, and I don't think it was just, you know, because he was buried on the depth chart. From what we're hearing, Russ East isn't the last one that's going to transfer before the season is over. And there's other guys that have requested the paperwork. And I would be shocked, Rick, if Vince Tyree hasn't at least talked to some of the players that are transferring or thinking of transferring or parents. I think if he's trying to get the full story, I would be surprised and taken aback if that hasn't happened by now. That's where I sort of tend to move in the direction, not necessarily fully there, but in the direction of I can see Tyree making a move if what has happened the last week is now the theme over the next, you know, 7 to 10 to 14 days.
You could be right. I mean, I wouldn't say that that's an outlandish position at all. It's certainly a reasonable position. And, you know, they're going to be on national TV tomorrow night against the Syracuse team that I checked the numbers. I mean, they've beaten them all 4 years. They've been in the ACC, and every win's by over 20. I think the average has been a 31-point spread. They're going up there as a 21-point underdog. So that's just another snapshot of how fast and how quickly this program has fallen. And you don't fall off that quickly unless something is really, really wrong. And, you know, and you blend that in with what we're hearing about decommitments and players transferring. And, you know, there's a big issue there. And as if you're a good leader, you're trying to find out what it is and figure out what the next step is. I guess I was just hesitant in terms of trying to figure out how you move forward without him as the head coach with three family members on the staff and who's going to coach the team. But maybe it would be Mike Summers. I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised, I guess, if something happened. It's not. There's. We've talked about this now for several weeks. There's no really easy solution.
No.
And you're going to come home and play NC State, and I can't imagine the crowd's going to be very big. And then you're going to go in and play Kentucky, and we know it'll be predominantly UK fans. And it's just not a very pleasant scenario.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you're a player on Louisville's team, it would be tough to not know kind of what the climate outside of the program is. Like, I don't know what the climate is like inside the program. I don't know if these are just a number of players that, you know, are the outliers. I mean, that clearly could be the case. I think it's a decent indication when there's that number and quantity of players that might at least be thinking about transferring. I think that's certainly an indication. I think the fact that you see players not giving effort late in games, I think, is also sort of an indication of what's going on. So, no doubt, and it could be, you know, a number of outliers that are there with the particular program and the players and what's going on. But I would be shocked if the players didn't have at least an idea of the climate outside the program, that it certainly feels like all things are going to be leading to Vince Tyree is going to be making a move. So if the players are saying, I don't want to be a part of this culture, be a part of this program, or be a part of the environment that I'm with or this coaching staff, I do wonder if there's an examination of, well, maybe I just play out the last 3 weeks, see who they hire, and stay here at Louisville if it's somebody I want to play for, or if it's, you know what, I don't even want to stay the last 3 weeks. Like, I would be surprised, Rick, would you, if some of the players didn't get the climate outside of the program, that it's pretty obvious that the coaching staff is not going to be the coaching staff in 2019?
Yeah, I mean, they've got to be paying attention. They've seen the drop-off in fan support. I'm sure they've got to see what's on social media, hear what people are saying around campus. I'm sure they're tuned into it all and are aware of just, you know, how upset people are. And I guess you'd have to have hope that they have faith in the athletic department that they'll find a fix and, you know, get it going forward. You'd really, like you said, 20 people is an entire recruiting class. And if you lose 20 guys and then put yourself in a situation moving forward where, you know, you're going to bring a new coach in who's going to have to play catch up, especially with the new, you know, mid-December signing date of his first recruiting class being, you know, a short time period. Was looking at a really, that's a daunting situation moving forward.
Yeah, because then it's like, well, what's the point of, you know, diminishing returns to where you go, all right, are you digging more of a hole with Bobby as the head coach for who the next guy is that's going to take over? Does it make it tougher for the next guy if that's Jeff Brohm to come in if he loses a couple of players? Because I don't think the team, and this is where you get into the indictment of the coaching staff, I don't think the team is just completely devoid of talent. Like, I think there's some players on the team, and it's weird that if Charlie Strong was the coach and Bobby was out there, you would go, man, what could Bobby Petrino do with Tutu Atwell and a Hassan Hall? And yet Bobby's the coach, and you get this feeling of, man, what could Jeff Brohm do with Tutu Atwell and Hassan Hall? And it's just so weird that it's that way, but that's how I feel. I'm like, there's players, and I think Jeff Brohm would be, this offense would be humming to a better degree than it is right now if Brohm was the head coach. It's just it's just in that position now to where the benefit of the doubt goes to the guy that has done it with lesser players and lesser recruiting classes and back-to-back years at Purdue and beats Ohio State by 30.
Yeah, I mean, look at Purdue's guys. I mean, they got decent guys. I mean, and obviously they have Rondell Moore, who was a higher-rated recruit than they had in the past. But, I mean, they don't have superior talent. They got okay talent. I mean, their quarterback is undersized and is – I think they tried to find ways not to play him.
They were playing
Elijah Sindelar and then went back to David Blau and coached him up and got him to be as productive as he is. And this is a team that started out with losing three games and didn't go in the tank. They came back better, and now they're beating Ohio State. They're beating Iowa. They should beat Minnesota this weekend and go from 0-3 to being bowl eligible and then have Wisconsin at home, I believe, and then they play their last game in Bloomington. So, I mean, they ought to win 7. They could win 8. You know, it's hard. And his guys play, if you watch Purdue play, They're creative, they're fun, and they play hard. And you can't say any of those three things about the way Louisville's played this year. And as we've talked about again every week, it's the alarming thing has been just the total lack of, you know, pride or competitiveness. And losing by those kinds of scores and so many games where people just – who's ever heard of a game where a team has three guys run for 100 yards and none of them have – 10 carries. I mean, I don't remember anything close to that.
No, I mean, it's and there's a lot of film of guys jogging. There's a lot of
yeah, there is.
It's disappointing, is what it is, for a season that you thought could be, you know, the sort of the next era of okay, we'll see what old Bobby Ball would look like, and it's been just a complete and total disaster. Last one on this, and then I want to move on to some basketball stuff. But where's your confidence level of Brom would be the guy? Like, Bobby's out, we know that, but that Brom is the next guy in there. Is it as much of a sort of a slam dunk like Chris Mack ended up being? Are there more it seems like there's certainly more hurdles with the money there, but where's your confidence that next year against Notre Dame, Jeff Brom will be roaming the sidelines for Louisville?
Well, I mean, it's a slam dunk in terms of that's who it should be, because that's who I think people want, and he's got all the credentials that you're looking for. Where it isn't a slam dunk is knowing, you know, where his head is and what he wants. And I was with Pat Forty last night at an event, and he's repeated what other people have told me is not only, you know, are top college people very aware of him, but some NFL people are aware of him too. So you know, whether that would be able to successfully recruit him here or not, I don't know. I don't. But he's got, if it's a negotiating game, he's got all the cards. I'll say that much.
Yeah, it's starting with five. Is what
$5 million?
Yeah, Jeff Brom's gonna make $5 million next year, whether it's with Purdue or it's with Louisville. I think that's what it's gonna. I think Louisville's gonna take $5 million to get him from Purdue. He's making four right now. And so if Louisville comes calling, Purdue's going to say, well, we'll pay you more. And then I think because of his – look, he's loyal to Louisville, certainly, and he would. I think he would take the job. I think he would. I'm not nearly as convinced as I was, you know, a few weeks ago, but I think he would take the job still. But I do think there's a loyalty to Purdue for the ones that hired him and gave him a shot at a Power 5 program, that if they're like, look, man, we'll pay you $5 million, and Louisville's like, oh, we can't really go more than four, he might go, well, I think the NFL might be right around the corner, or one of these big-time, like, Blue Bloods might be right around the corner. Do I want to go to Louisville and coach there 2 years and then say, do I have to turn down an NFL job because I feel bad that I'm only at Louisville for 2 years? Whereas I would take the NFL job if I was at Purdue. But I think if Louisville's going to hire him, I think they're paying him at least $5 million next year. And that's also a hurdle
do they have the money for that? He's on the right side of the Big Ten, where in this year he's going to need Northwestern to lose twice to win that division.
Yeah.
And that's probably not – Northwestern, I think, could lose this weekend. I think they play Iowa this weekend, but then the next
two are
winnable games. I've looked at their schedule. So they're probably not going to win – the Big Ten West, but he's on the side where he can win, and he's got a good recruiting class coming in, which could get even better if he gets David Bell, the big receiver out of Warren Central in Indianapolis, and Purdue, I think, in his final two or three. He's got a good quarterback coming in. Purdue, they're selling tickets. People are excited about him. Purdue's got a good, and not a great football tradition, but it's a very good football tradition. And he could stay there, as you mentioned, and win big the next couple of years, and then get a, you know, he can get one of those jobs where they aspire to win national championships or an NFL job. So that's why, you know, it's not a slam dunk from his side. He's got some decisions. If, you know, if we get to that point, he's got some decisions he needs to make.
Yeah, I mean, it's look, he if he gets $5 million, they're still technically saving money on what the salary would have been a year ago for the basketball and football coaches, because it would have been seven for Rick and, what, three for Bobby. Now it's four for Bobby, so that was 10, and they'd be paying Brom five and Mac four. That's nine. You saved $1 million. There you go. You're good. I mean, it's that's just good business is what that is. So, I mean, it's they not paying Rick Pitino the amount of money they were paying him is helping a little bit, and Chris Mack, I say only, but only making $4 million. You know, helps out a little bit as well. So, again, a number of hurdles. We'll see. I wonder what the next couple of weeks will bring in off-the-field stories, if it makes it more likely that we're talking about Bobby being let go before November 25th. Rick Bozich.
Right.
He is from WDRB and WDRB.com. Tuesday night, this has been the question most people have asked, so I'll ask you as well. Your takeaway, was that more about Duke or was that more about Kentucky?
More about Duke. I mean, Duke played phenomenal. You know, it was their night. I'm sure they're really good. I thought Kentucky would win. I was one of those 32 people in the Lexington paper who, of the 32, 30 of them picked Kentucky to win. I was one of the 30 because I had my doubts that for first game of the year that Duke had enough veterans, but veterans not relevant. And talent mattered, and they made shots. And my sense was that Kentucky didn't match Duke's aggressiveness, and they definitely didn't bring much purpose or edge to playing defense. If you only force a team into turning the ball over four times once in the second half and you only get one steal, that's a sign to me that you really weren't trying to impose your will at all on defense.
That was the more disappointing part for me was Transylvania was a little bit of a concerning, you know, a game that it was the amount of straight line drives they gave up. And I remember that being the conversation after the Transylvania exhibition game. But you know, I still was like, I didn't like buy in that it was like, okay, well, they just weren't doing it because they couldn't. It was one of those, you know, exhibitions that happens. And then seeing it against Duke, in which they just could not defend at all. And then they stopped defending. And 10 minutes left to go in the first half, the game was over. And you got the general manager that, you know, talked to Jeff Goodman that said it was embarrassing, the effort that he saw from Kentucky, the lack of fire, the lack of, you know, effort on the court and on the defensive end, that his words were embarrassing. And so, and I think that was the case. I don't think Duke is that good. I don't think Kentucky's that bad. But
I agree.
But that night when Duke got out there and started rolling and Kentucky got out there and started seeing those guys and how good they were, that used to be Kentucky just sending waves of talent at somebody and overwhelming them that had more experience and they were the talented ones. And now it was Kentucky that was watching a team that was that much more talented than they were, and they played basketball, you know, together, and they're watching that team, and they find themselves sort of just wilting and stopping and saying, well, what's the point, instead of fighting. Benefit of the doubt is that it's game number one, but it was still worrisome to see them sort of cave in that quickly. And the last thing you want, Rick, is for a team to develop a personality of being front runners, that when things are going well, boy, they can really look good, and when it starts going bad, they just don't have the fight to dig out of it.
Yeah, and the best thing I can say is it's good that it happened in the very first game.
No doubt.
The coach can see it. He can show them the video. He can address it and find a way to fix it. And if there's guys that he really feels that that's an issue, then you get another chance. If it happens again, then, you know, we're going to a different guy. But you've got to have a little bit more toughness and resolve to – and there's not anybody in the country that should beat them by 34 points. And, I mean, that's just not – That shouldn't happen. They're too talented, and they've got too many pieces. And you know, I did it somewhat facetiously on Twitter. It's like, who's going to be the first one to write that Duke's going 40-0? And I've seen, you know, some, like Rob Doster at NBC Sports had something about, you know, how great Duke was, and Duke's really good. But I think Duke's going to lose two or three games. I'll predict that Virginia will beat Duke once. If they play them twice, because they got veteran dudes, and they won't let Duke play the way they want to play. They'll make them play the way Virginia wants to play. And I'm not convinced from what I've seen from Duke over the last few years that Coach K gets his guys to defend the way he used to get them to defend. And there'll be games when they'll get beat because of that.
Yeah, it's a good point about the defense. I think maybe my thoughts on defense with K were, you know, because Kentucky still scored 84. But my thoughts on defense with K were maybe a little bit, I don't want to say glossed over, maybe were, you know, not de-emphasized, I guess is the best way to describe it, by the way that I saw the guys playing together on Duke, that I was like, wow, this is a young team, bunch of freshmen, superstars, and they're sharing the basketball, and they're cheering for each other, and they're hugging and high-fiving when the other guy has a big play. And maybe that de-emphasized a little bit about the, well, that doesn't mean they're going to play defense together. It means they enjoy playing basketball together and seeing the other guys succeed. It doesn't mean that they're going to be a good defensive unit on the floor at the same time. So I think that's a good point. It can get lost on me viewing it and going, I'm impressed not only with the talent, I was impressed with how easily it looked that they're, you know, wanting to share the basketball and not like, no, Zion's going to get his and RJ's going to get his. Although RJ took 26 shots, but, you know.
I mean, I might be wrong. I mean, Barrett and Williamson might be like two of the best dudes who've played in college basketball in the last 10 or 15 years. Maybe they really are. I mean, but, I've got to see it more than one game. I've already – hasn't somebody already, like, compared them to the Fab Five already? I mean, it's like –
Sports Illustrated had the cover. Sports Illustrated had them on the cover that said something about the Fab Five.
Slow down. I mean, I don't know. It's – maybe they are that good. Maybe I'll be wrong. And they are very talented, and I know those two guys will be two of the top three or four worst draft picks in the country. But – I need to. I don't know who Duke plays next. What's their next challenge? I know they play Indiana. It was three weeks from yesterday in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, but that's at Cameron, so that shouldn't be much of a challenge. I'm sure they're going to roll for quite a while.
They play. Let's see. They should be rolling for quite a while. That was the other sort of takeaway. I had a couple of quick takeaways from that game, watching it from the Duke perspective, not from, okay, this is what I'm thinking of Kentucky, the point guards, the returning players, the defense, the quit, and, you know, lack of fight. All of those things were clearly storylines about UK, but a couple of other ones that were sort of just peripheral was one, Louisville and Indiana fans watching and going, yeah, kick Kentucky's, oh crap, we got to play that team. Oh no, that's we got to go up against that team too. Oh damn. And the other sort of peripheral one is if there's NBA teams or fans watching that game going, okay, yes, lose every game. Lose. Like New York Knicks fans, like Tuesday night and on into Wednesday, were like, lose every game. Put Zion and Kristaps Porzingis and Kevin Knox on the court together, lose. Those are a couple sort of peripheral ones and reactions to see some of the NBA guys are like, yeah, that's why you want to tank this year, is because you get one of those two guys, get the one or two pick, you're feeling good. Get number three, rough spot for you.
Yeah, and they don't play a non-conference road game. They got two neutral site games,
yeah.
San Diego State and Texas Tech.
they don't play on the road until January 8th.
KenPom's got them, but the less than 50% win probability in three games, all on the road. Virginia, Syracuse, and Carolina. So they're good. They're not as, you know, we always get too carried away. Teams are never as good as they might look in one game, and they're never as bad as they might look in one game. So I think it's actually pretty good. Southern Illinois got not a great team, but, you know, they're a top 100 team. So if Kentucky comes out and tanks it again tomorrow, they're going to have a game. So we'll see what kind of response they're going to have tomorrow. And I think it's good for them to play, you know, this quickly.
Well, I agree, and I think it's good that, you know, from a standpoint of they're not going to be tested again until, I mean, maybe Seton Hall. But really, that North Carolina game is December 22nd. Like, typically, you come off the Duke game and you're going Southern Illinois and North Dakota and VMI and Winthrop and Tennessee State and Monmouth and UNC Greensboro.
Right.
And it's like, no, thank you. But at least, I mean, from the standpoint now, it's like you can learn something watching these games to see if they do play defense and if they just go out and have a laugher of a game and just dominate somebody, which they didn't really do in the exhibitions.
Yeah, and then you want to see more from the sophomores. That was the more disappointing thing of, you know, P.J. Washington was,
yeah,
I guess, okay, but Nick Richardson, Quade Green were nothing. And I think that most people were expecting them to be at least something.
Louisville tips off an hour and a half in their season opener,
yep,
against Nicholls State. What are you expecting to see? What do you want to see? Anything particular that you'll be looking for tonight in the game? And a 19-point favorite are the Louisville Cardinals, according to Vegas, and also KenPom, because Vegas and KenPom are eerily very similar, often spot on,
yeah,
in the line. What are you looking for to see from Chris Mack's team tonight?
I want to see who, you know, is really the dude on offense. I was not at the Bellarmine game. I was at the Simmons game. V.J. King played okay. I think for Louisville to be really good this year, V.J. King needs to take a step forward. Everybody's been waiting on it. He took a little step forward last year, but I think he really needs to play with more of an edge and more tenacity and more confidence. We'll see a little bit more offense, too, from Darius Perry than I have seen. I think Enoch's been pretty good. I think Nora has a chance to be maybe their best player. He plays like he really is bought in. He's all in on Chris Mack, and he brings, like, he's got energy and some leadership about him. And Malik Williams is another one I want to see. I mean, I thought last year he developed some bad habits where he became so perimeter oriented that it was excessive. And on a team that doesn't have a tremendous amount of size, I want to see him be more of a presence around the basket. So those would be the main things.
All right, we'll see what ends up going on tonight. When we have a little bit more time, we may talk about a couple of other issues going on next time we have a conversation.
We got a lot to talk about, man.
We didn't even get a chance. Amazing. We talked about Bobby. We talked about the UK and Duke game. Talked a little bit about Louisville, and we didn't really get into the FBI stuff that's out there, which. Again, they were all plans of what, Dawkins wanted to do, but nothing that ever happened because everything was a plan to start paying in October of 2017. Dude was indicted in September of 2017, so there wasn't any evidence of money exchanging hands because it never even got to the point of when he wanted to pay them because that was going to start the next month. So I don't really think there's anything to where any of the schools are exposed of players that were named in that. That they have to worry about, sitting players out like Sylvia D'Souza or anything like Kansas. I think they just move on and go, we're playing our guys. That's Christian Dawkins. That's what he wanted to do. Didn't happen. He got indicted. We're good. I mean, I think that's the case, man. Sylvia D'Souza sitting out.
I was with 40 last night, and he thinks things are going to pick. He wrote the story that broke it, I guess, between games on Tuesday night. And he thinks the pace is going to pick up pretty quickly.
So, okay.
Every time I look down at my phone, I expect to learn something.
That was crazy, though, because the story on Yahoo broke 10 minutes after Bill Self got off the podium after the win over Michigan State. And it was like, Pat, you know damn well that story's coming out. Like, you know that story's coming out. How do you not ask Bill Self about, hey, Bill, sort of throw it out?
Well, he was working on nailing it down.
Was he? Okay. All right.
So he's working on nailing it down.
He probably put it out as soon as he could. I get it. That makes sense. It was just, I thought it was odd. It's like, Bill Self's off the podium. They're doing the college football, playoff rankings, and it pops up. And I'm like, wait a minute, Bill, it was just on the podium. We'll see. Rick Bozich, WDRB and WDRB.com. All right, final four time for you. Four quickies. Just tell me the first thing that pops in your head if you are ready.
Yes, sir.
If they are playing today, what was a wider gap talent? Is it UK Georgia football or UK Duke basketball? What seemed like it was a wider gap between the two?
Wow, that's a very good question. I'll say UK Georgia football.
Really? Okay.
I just talked a little bit about how I'm not going to go that bananas over Duke yet. Yeah, I mean, Kentucky's guys aren't, they weren't rated as high as they have been in the past. There's no question about that. And Duke's guys were 1, 2, and 3. I'm not as big on Reddish as the other two. I think he's a volume shooter, but I'll say the football just because there's more guys.
All right. Louisville City FC, back-to-back USL champs tonight when the game's over.
Yeah, home field advantage, big crowd, I think it's sold out. Yeah, I think Louisville FC wins.
Yeah, and Drogba's washed up. That's what I know. I'll give you my soccer take. Get me out there on the pitch with the kit and the result. I'll tell you all about how Drogba's washed up. Guy sucks. Overrated. His entire career overrated. I don't know much about him, Rick. Don't know much about him. Bobby Petrino is the coach against Kentucky November
24th. Yeah, I'll say yeah, he is. He'll finish it out.
All right. And I did not ask you last week. I should have since the basketball season was going to be starting before we talked again. But I'll ask you now, who do you have winning the national championship this year in college basketball?
I'm going to go with the Zags. I picked them last year when the tournament started and they let me down. I think they're really good. Then they win their opener by 69.
Nice.
Just their year.
Yeah, that's a nice pick. Nice game. We'll see what happens about the Zags. You are one of, I think, five people, even with ESPN, out of the 32 or 40, whatever it was, that made their selections. Gonzaga got the second most picks for the national champion. Kentucky got 2. Gonzaga and Kansas were both, or excuse me, Kentucky got 10. Gonzaga and Kansas were both tied at 5 for the second most. So,
what did Duke get?
Duke got 2.
Duke got 2.
2, tied with North Carolina.
We only got 2 out of 32 in their earlier picks for that game.
So. I wonder what they would have got if they would have made their selections on Wednesday. Yeah. Virginia got 4, by the way. Virginia got 4 picks. Duke got 2. If they would have made those Wednesday morning, how many out of 31 would have had Duke winning the whole thing? So,
Virginia won their opener, right? I think they did. I'm pretty sure.
They did.
I mean, I think they did. You know, the biggest ACC win was probably Florida State just pounding. Well, other than Duke, but Florida State pounded Georgia.
So, Florida.
Good night for the ACC.
Florida State.
Virginia, the number one overall seed is
well,
going
Rick,
down.
We appreciate you joining us, sir. WDRB's Rick Bozich. Rick, enjoy basketball tonight, sir.
The ultimate upset has happened. A 16 has beaten a 1.
That's always fine. You know what I mean? And Marquette dominated UMBC. Dominated them. Marquette, clearly better than Virginia. That's the takeaway. 267-9680 is the phone number. Kevin, last week, the listener was much better than I was. We'll see if the listener this week can get the job done. Fat Jack will join us, and he will break down the games and give us his thoughts on the way to go, his opinions, games, if he likes to play them or will stay away from them. He'll do all of that on the other side. 267-9680, caller number 6. You will get to play and get an opportunity to win, and you might be winner number 3 in a row. Back-to-back losses for this guy right here. It's unfortunate, but we'll get back on the winning side today. We'll see. 267-9680, caller number 6, playing against Fat Jack, playing against me as well, and we'll see. That is next. It's ESPN 680 105.7.
You are listening to The Zone Podcast. Check out Jason Anderson weekdays 3 to 6 only on ESPN 680 and ESPNLouisville.com.
Do you know what the future you is up to right now? It could be working for UPS. UPS is now hiring part-time package handlers in Louisville. For select shifts, you can now receive bonuses up to $250. They also graduate debt-free through the Metro College Program. Apply now at upsjobs.com. That's upsjobs.com. Get there